Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Of the Pack
Want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
And yes, we did experience the thrill of a live game at Lambeau Field where the Green Bay Packers took on the San Francisco 49ers, and we are here now to recap that and so much more for you, everybody. Welcome to what is by far, at least in my opinion, the happiest version of False of the Pack that I have ever done. I'm your host, Jacob Westendorf, and joined with me, as always, is Jason Perrone. Jason, how was your weekend?
Oh, it was fantastic. It was one for the books, the record books, for sure. Congratulations to you, Jacob, and your beautiful wife, Frankie. Jacob, I won't say Jacob Rybarski, just because that joke has already been played out. But so, Mr. and Mrs. Westendorf, congratulations to both of you. It was an honor to be with you guys and part of your special day. Thanks again to your family for letting me be a part of it and for doing such a great job of creating such a great day for everyone. It was amazing. So that was part A. And I'd never been to Rockford before, so I saw parts of Rockford, Illinois. I've only ever been in, like, the suburbs that I grew up in and the downtown Chicago area, so always good to explore some other parts of the universe. And thank you for the 24-hour Walmart that's really close to your house as well. That came in handy when I got in late on Saturday. It was a good time. But I think what you're referring to is the end of the weekend, which actually extended into Monday for us, and our trip to Lambeau Field, and a chance for us to sit in the stands together and watch the Packers. They ended up winning. It was a lot of fun. It was very eye-opening. Got to sit in the new section. I've never been in a seat at Lambeau Field. It's a very underrated experience. It's so nice to have your own space and a cup holder. It was a good time, Jacob, and I have to imagine you're still floating it on cloud nine as well. This weekend was about you, not me.
That's correct. Well, I've often said that my weekend, if you will, was about everyone else. I tried to make it that way through most of the weekend. First of all, the weekend began on Saturday. Obviously, we had our rehearsal, went through everything there. And then for all of you listening, here is the portion where you're going to hate me for this portion of the show. The Michigan Wolverines took on the Wisconsin Badgers on Saturday night. And it was a glorious, if you are me, a glorious ass-kicking of epic proportions. Alex Hornibrook had zero completions at one point, I think midway through the fourth quarter in the second half. ended up completing two there at the end of the game. Michigan looks to be in pretty good shape. They go to take on the Michigan State Spartans on Saturday. My hope is that this has happened before, so I'm trying to be a little cautious. Michigan State tends to be the team that ruins some of Michigan's seasons. They've done that before. The hope is that they don't do that again. That was Saturday. And then we just kind of spent some time hanging out Saturday night into Sunday morning. And then, you know, from there, Sunday morning we had breakfast, and then at about 10:30 we all just kind of looked at each other and said, I guess it's showtime. And then went to the event, which of course you guys have heard about for the last probably year or so, is the wedding. The wedding was wonderful. The weather held off. Thankfully it was nice enough outside, I guess you could say, for the middle of October, you know, 50 some odd degrees, a little cooler than what we probably thought it would be. In the 30s or the 40s, and it didn't pour down rain. So we were able to stay outside. We had our reception inside shortly thereafter. And it was really just a good experience with all, I mean, just kind of hanging out with all you guys throughout the, you know, Saturday, Sunday, and then Jason, as you mentioned, spilling over into Monday. We went up to the game Monday night, and I do apologize to those of you that are listening that expected to meet up with us on Monday for a few things. First of all, we got in a little later than we expected for various different reasons. It turned out we were all a little more tired than we thought we would be following a all-day Sunday event. And that is especially – oh, and would you look at this. Mrs. Westendorf has joined the room that I am recording in, so I'm going to embarrass her. Say hello, honey. There she is, newly minted and as beautiful as the first day I met her, Mrs. Westendorf. I just like saying that. Anyways, back to my apology. I know some of you said, you know, we were going to meet up at a bar or something like that. And it just, for a few different reasons, didn't work out. Jason, first of all, we had to go to the shop to get JJ a new present, which was nice. But then we found out that we couldn't leave once we entered. So I think we walked in the stadium at around 5 o'clock and went through the pro shop and that zoo that was on game day. And unfortunately they wouldn't let us out and let us back in. So I apologize to you guys. I'm sure we can figure something out the next time around. Jason, I think after this time around, we kind of made a small pact, at least, that barring anything crazy, this is going to be a yearly trek. Is it not?
I think it should be. I think we should try to make it a yearly trek. I mean, it was – the best part was obviously the whole experience, you know, your dad, your brother are there, and it's Packers football, and it doesn't matter what the circumstances are, you love it. I've been at Lambeau in snow, cold, hot weather, sunshine, rain, you name it. It's a fantastic thing in any occasion. So we were jacked up, having a great time. Very much anticipated, finally, our trip to Lambeau. And we definitely got to try to do a home game as often as we can, although I think next year we were kind of talking about maybe doing the Chiefs game, because I believe, unless they flip the script, the Packers should be in Kansas City, and you've actually already experienced that once before. I haven't. But if the Chiefs are going to continue to be what they have been so far this season – then that might be a really fun game to go watch. So, absolutely. We gotta make it happen. Frankie, if you're still listening, hello. Thank you for letting me be a part of your big day. You were beautiful. It was a fantastic night, a day and night, I should say. Great ceremony, great group of guys and gals, and just had a great time. But the capper on it all, Jake, was the game. And what I was going to say was, what was really cool about it was, originally we weren't going to sit together. We ended up sitting together. For some unfortunate circumstances, but obviously the fact that we were able to sit together was great. And what I liked about it was that I had somebody next to me finally who can speak intelligently, not just about football, but about the Packers. And it was a lot easier to understand what was going on and what I'm seeing, because normally when I go to games, I'm either with somebody that's just there for the experience, or I've gone by myself before too, and I didn't have really anybody to kind of talk to. I just kind of had to take it in on my own. So fortunately it ended well, but, you know, sitting where we did in that new section, obviously you're up high, we were able to see a lot. So I'm kind of excited about the show because we'll probably be able to bring some analysis and ideas on formations and things that we saw as they developed that I don't think you can generally see when you're a little bit closer to the field.
Absolutely. I was looking at the schedule while you were talking there, and yes, the Packers do go to Arrowhead next season, so that was a possibility. However, also looking at the home schedule, I'm going to be willing to bet pretty strongly that it's going to be a strong lean toward the Philadelphia Eagles game at Lambeau Field, depending on when that game ends up landing on the schedule. Because, well, my dad's an Eagles fan. He mentioned that he wanted to see the new section, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot that goes into that. The easiest way to do that is to get him to go to a game, but it's kind of hard to get somebody to go to a game where their favorite team isn't playing. So bless my dad's heart for doing that, but I'd like to be able to take him to a game where his favorite team is playing as well. So that's a lot more we could talk about later on. Yes, Jason, we did. That was the one, that was the first of a lot of different surprises this weekend. You know, Monday we didn't know that we were sitting together. How it worked was we had five tickets and we had five people. And then we got up to Green Bay and I took one look at my wife and said, "You don't look like you're in any condition to go." So she was sicker than all hell. It was sad, you know, unfortunately she wasn't able to go, but then Jason, we got there and we figured out that, well, we might as well sit together. So we were trying to finagle a way to either get me in your section or get you into my section, and we ended up getting you into my section. So, yes, we were a little higher up, but as I can attest, for those of you that haven't done it before, that section is really nice. I would recommend it as much as you can. I mean, there's still something to be said about being in the lower bowl, in the bleachers, the old school nature of that. But the upper section, I mean, other than Jason having to walk up what felt like 87 flights of stairs, that sucked. But other than that, I mean, yeah, I think we got a better perspective. There's just certain things you can see higher up that you can't see when you're closer to the field. So that was a nice experience getting up there. And yeah, then the game started and it was really interesting for a lot of reasons. And we're going to jump into why right now. The 49ers get the ball first. They go right down the field and score a touchdown. They did literally whatever the hell they wanted. And, I mean, I wasn't surprised. Jason, I don't know. I think I mentioned, I haven't looked it up, but I mentioned that night, you know, that I feel like the Packers have given up a first quarter touchdown, or at least first quarter points, in each of their games this season. I feel like they haven't been able to keep the other team out of the end zone, save for the Buffalo Bills. They didn't score any points. But it feels like the Packers have given up a boatload of points in the first quarter this year, so I was not surprised to see that they gave up a first quarter touchdown here. The 49ers went right down the field. Kyle Shanahan is a great coach, so that's not surprising to me either. It's just kind of been the nature of the Packers defense, at least thus far this season. So that's kind of where we're at with the start there. They go right down the field, score, and then the Packers get the ball, and we thought they scored within two plays. They get one bootleg pass to Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and he goes way down the field, gets about 60 yards on the first play of the game, and then Aaron Jones scores on a counter. Well, we thought he scored. Touchdown on a counter play, and then eventually it turned into a diamond formation on the left side to Ty Montgomery. It was a lateral. Turns out it was a rushing touchdown for Ty Montgomery, which my fantasy team, who was facing Aaron Rodgers, really appreciated. Touchdown 7-7 right away. Jason, that first series really brings about a few things for me. First of all, the narrative of Mike McCarthy's offense is he never schemes receivers open, and he just expects them to win on isolation routes. And believe me, there's some of that too. But I think that we're starting to – there are film guys out there, Zach Cruz, Ben Fennell, Ross Uglum, plenty of guys that are out there watching the game tape and completely dispelling this notion that the Packers never scheme anybody open. And I think you and I saw that on this night as well, especially on the first series. They're scheming guys open. It's just a matter of whether or not Rodgers is trusting what he's seeing and finding those guys or not, or at least that's what my opinion is. But on the first series, didn't you feel like you saw receivers being schemed. I mean, granted, it was a three-play possession, but, you know, the first possession, first quarter, whatever, you saw those things happening in front of you. You had to have felt that way, didn't you?
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers, for the past couple weeks, ever since he hurt his knee or even all season long, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and assign the reason for why it's happening, but he's missing guys. He's missing open plays and receivers that he used to hit. And, you know, I joke that his knee doesn't affect his eyesight, but actually I think it might. I mean, I think the knee is becoming less and less of an issue. And for those who are big Rodgers apologists and supporters, and I'll consider myself one of each, you know, that excuse is quickly going out the window because, my understanding is after the bye week, he's going to ditch that brace for a smaller one or he may not even wear one. So the knee injury, I don't think, is becoming as much of a factor. Now we're at a point where it's very baffling why he does miss some of these guys. And, yeah, we're up high, so we're seeing these route concepts develop. And he did hit Marquez Valdes-Scantling for the long catch and run. He hit Jimmy Graham for the long catch and run. You know, he took his shots and tried to take his shots. But there are guys, and, you know, what's getting me is that you've got Devontae Adams, who has some of the best footwork in the league. I mean, you can sit here and we can make our list of top receivers and this and that. Devontae Adams is a beast. He is a fantastic wide receiver. He might not be putting up, you know, the thousands of yards and the billion D touchdowns, although he's starting to rack up a lot of touchdowns with Aaron Rodgers. He's obviously Rodgers' man in the offense, Jordy Nelson gone now. But you've got a guy like Devontae Adams, and you're not throwing it to him when he gets open over the middle. I mean, it's rare that Devontae Adams can't separate from a defensive back, so you can't key on 17 all day. But the stuff over the middle is what is getting me that Rodgers is opting not to go to. And I don't know why that is. Those are just easy plays that, you know, minus the Chicago game in the second half. The Chicago game in the second half was, I think, the offense that this team should be running, whether Rodgers is healthy or not, because it worked against a good defense, against a good pass rush, and a fairly decent secondary. I mean, they're not all world, but they're good enough, Chicago's. That's what I think they should be doing. And that, you know, what was the last play of that game? It was a pass over the middle to Randall Cobb because you've got wide receivers that know how to get open in space. Now, you can sit here also then and say, okay, well, you've got rookies, though, that don't understand those concepts. The young guys, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Javon Moore, EQ, they don't know how to sit down in the zone. Well, maybe true, but that development is going to take place and happen a lot sooner than it's not. And then you've got, you know, 9-10-year veteran Jimmy Graham, tight end Jimmy Graham, that, you know, I'm listening to these recaps and these podcasts and the beat writers talk about how Rodgers looked visibly frustrated at Graham at times. He had some big plays, Jimmy Graham did, but he also failed to sit down in the zone and be a target for Rodgers. And Rodgers didn't know, I mean, he kept drifting. Graham kept drifting, and Rodgers didn't know where he was going to be. And it's like, if there's any chance that the ball's going to get turned over or picked off, Rodgers is going to hold on to it. So, but I just, you know, it's a blessing and a curse to have guys like Ben Fennell, Andy Herman, Bukowski, Ross Uglum, you know, all those guys that do the film and the still shot breakdowns because, or Zach Cruz, because then you get a picture of like a play or a gif of a play that you remember like, oh, that was a bad sack. And then it's even more frustrating to find out that there was actually an open receiver on that play. So it was tough to see throughout the night. But on that first series, yes. The receivers are getting open. There's no issue there. But unfortunately, there's only one guy that throws the ball, and he's got to work out whatever it takes to get the ball in the hands of those guys who are open.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that. It's, you know, it's possible that Rodgers doesn't trust what he sees because he doesn't trust the offense. You know, there's a lot of things to dissect there that we frankly don't have a ton of time to do. And honestly, I haven't watched nearly enough film to be educated on that. And Jason, I know that you have not either. So, I mean, I don't want to speculate and give a uneducated opinion basically and tell you guys a bunch of crap. So there's a lot of reasons I'm sure that the Packers are in the position they're in offensively. But as that game progresses, they get to 17-7 pretty quickly because the Niners, after the Packers score their touchdown, fumble the ensuing kickoff. But then, as we've seen all year long, the red zone issues continue, and I don't get it. They were unstoppable in the red zone last year, albeit some of that due to Jordy Nelson being on the team. But then not only is Jordy Nelson not here, but they add Jimmy Graham, who is maybe the best red zone weapon in the NFL, and he has yet to really make his mark in the red zone. Now, he had a great game, and we'll get to that too, but red zone issues, they end up kicking a field goal, and then before they get another chance, they go down the field, they score a touchdown again. This time, Rodgers hit the Adams right in front of us in the end zone, and that was something that was encouraging to see, or at least we thought it was going to be for the majority of the night. Rodgers hung in the pocket. He stepped up into the pocket, hit Adams in the back of the end zone in the corner. It was beautiful. And then from there, it was kind of stagnant. And this is a frustrating trend for this Packers team, is that they don't put together a complete game. Now, I'm not saying they need to be dominant for four quarters, but consistency for four quarters shouldn't be too much to ask. And at this point, it has been. And it seems like there's something. One unit hasn't played well in every game the Packers have played in. So, for example, they put Buffalo. They went 22-0. The defense is awesome. Mason Crosby's good. The offense is stinking up the place. In this game in particular, the defense and the special teams were pretty rough. The defense was bad. The 49ers did basically whatever they wanted. And this is an offense that, you know, we're not talking about Colin Kaepernick and Anquan Boldin and Michael Crabtree and a team coached by Jim Harbaugh that gave the Packers fits in the early 2010s. This is an offense that is run by C.J. Beathard, Marquise Godwin. I know Breda is a good player, but otherwise their running backs were a bunch of guys I haven't heard of. And that doesn't mean that they're not good, but the Niners are a banged-up team. This is a game that if the Packers defense is going to be where it wants to be at the end of the year, they have to make a mark. And against a team like this, this is one where it's 17-7. It should be foot on the throat, game over, good night, because we're going to beat you 41-7 now on our home turf. Instead, the Packers are losing at halftime. Jason, that's probably the most frustrating portion about this team, is there have been games where even like the Vikings game, for example, they were in position to dominate that football game, and it ended up being a tie because of a lot of different reasons. I don't want to go back and go over all that crap, but they have these lulls where it's just like they're asleep at the wheel for a while. And sometimes that's at the beginning of the game, like against Detroit, and it leads to a big deficit. Or it's this game where they're leading, and then all of a sudden not only is that lead gone, but they're in a decent hole that you don't know how they're going to get out of.
Yeah, that's been my issue this whole season, is they haven't had it. The Buffalo game is going to be the anomaly all season long because Buffalo has returned to earth and they just weren't good. But they're putting themselves in these deficits and in these early holes. And if there's one good thing I can say about it, if there's anything you can try to find, if I can try to find a silver lining, it's that it's at least toughening up the team a little bit, and it's not deflating them when they get down, because they should be used to being down at this point. They've had to overcome deficits in every game, I believe, at some point, except for Buffalo. So they should be used to that. But the problem is that, you know, the thing I struggle with is trying to figure out who's got the best take on this team, because what I keep hearing is, oh, well, then it becomes, you know, the offense becomes everybody just try to get open on your own. And Aaron, please pull a rabbit out of your hat or your head, if you're Jason Witten, and save us. And I don't know that that's necessarily true. I think Mike McCarthy, and I'm sure we'll get to this topic much later, is getting some unfair shots taken at him and criticism for not being creative enough to keep up with the league. And, you know, he's antiquated and the game is passing him by. And so he doesn't have the ability to design an offense that works anymore. And Aaron Rodgers is frustrated and they don't get along. And these are all things that I've heard from various sources. And we've all heard it. So Aaron Rodgers has, in the last 4 or 5 years, you know, really made a charge at the narrative that he can't come from behind. I think that's all but out the window. I think that went out the window after the Dallas playoff game, but he's pulled several other comeback victories out of his hat since then. Well, you and I were in the stands for one just a few days ago. So it's not ideal to get behind early. It's also not ideal when, like you said, your team doesn't play complete football all game long. And I can't quite put my finger on the totality of it. I don't know if that's Pettin and the young guys on defense just not realizing, like, hey, It's okay to start fast. Don't wait to go into panic mode and start going for the ball and taking some chances and getting some turnovers later in games. Get them earlier. Now, maybe there is something to be said about if they win the coin flip, because they deferred. They won the coin toss and they deferred. I'm a huge fan of that because, you know, I always kind of take the very conservative approach of if everything goes sideways and you're up against it and it's not what you thought it was going to be, at least when you start the second half, you know that you're getting a possession. You know that you will get the ball to start the second half, barring an onside kick, prize onside kick or a fumble. So maybe they should start taking the ball and scoring and trying to go down and score. The problem is that their offense is very unpredictable, and we don't know if they're going to be able to churn it out. Now, they built up a 10-point lead, which was great, and I think you and I both, in our minds at that time, we didn't really talk about it. I think we both weren't surprised by that, and we expected them to just kind of roll from there, and that's just not what happened. So, but it's 60 minutes of football on both sides. The offense is getting all of the attention right now because that's where things are being missed, and that's where, you know, guys aren't, they're not churning, and they're not running like a well-oiled machine. It doesn't look like 2014. It doesn't look like 2011 anymore. You know, this is a new team. It's a new opportunity. But I will say, again, and maybe this is where we're headed next, I think that the play calling is okay. I'm not going to be play calling guy, but I do think there's some obvious things that get missed. You need to get the ball in the hands of your playmakers. That nice diamond formation that got Ty Montgomery in the end zone after the Aaron Jones touchdown was called back. There you go. There's some creativity. Oh, and hey, look, the idiot defense only put two defensive backs out there, so Ty Montgomery walked. I mean, he could have crawled into the end zone with the ball. What about Aaron Jones? Put the ball in his hands. We've been saying it for weeks. Just there's little things that I think hopefully Mike McCarthy can do instead of having to reinvent his playbook to make it a little bit easier for the offense to get on a roll so that they're not, like you said, so they're not facing these deficits and they can get some more points on the board earlier.
Yeah, I think you said it pretty well there. I mean, Mike McCarthy, the unfair criticism portion. I mean, has Mike McCarthy faced some fair criticism? Absolutely. And we can get to those fair criticisms here. But, you know, the idea that he's just this moronic cardboard cutout just standing on the sideline basically saying, okay, Aaron, go ahead, make a play. Like, sorry, guys, that was like a really bad Mike McCarthy impersonation there. But, like, go ahead, make a play, let Rodgers do everything. Like, that's not what he's doing. And, again, there's some things that are fair about the criticism of his coaching, his style, you know, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I mentioned this on Twitter the other day. Everybody just wants to say, oh, McCarthy's a terrible play caller. McCarthy's a predictable play caller. I believe that play calling guy moniker that you're discussing is something that originated with Cheesehead TV, and forgive me if it didn't. But, like, I want every single one of you that says, okay, McCarthy's play calling is predictable. That's fine if you believe that. What I want you to do for me then is if you want to have that discussion with me, I want you to write down every play that they called, the down and distance tendency, or not the tendency, I'm sorry, the down and distance, and what you would have called instead. Or, you know, what would have made it not predictable? Like, I think that that's such a lazy take, a lazy narrative that McCarthy's a predictable play caller. I think that's just something that to say when the offense doesn't work. And the reality is that when the offense doesn't work, there's a lot of different reasons why. And you can see there's some creativity. Now, is he as creative as, say, Andy Reid running a college offense in Kansas City with Pat Mahomes? No. Is he as creative as Sean McVay? No. But he's not a high school coach that any moron who sits in his room and plays Madden for 27 hours a day could easily replace as a play caller. I mean, that's just not how this is going to work. So, again, are there some criticisms that are fair? Yes. To me, I believe that goes strictly into his usage of players. Aaron Jones was the starting running back on Monday night, and that was great. That was encouraging to see. He was still outsnapped by Ty Montgomery and Jamal Williams. To continue to put Jamal Williams on the field, there was a point in that game where I believe it was Jones had three carries for like 35 yards, and Jamal Williams had three carries for 9 yards. That is a freaking perfect microcosm for those two players' careers. Again, does Jamal Williams have a role on this team? Yes. He should not be out-snapping Aaron Jones. He should not be out-running Aaron Jones. And the same is true for Ty Montgomery. Ty Montgomery does a lot of the same things Jamal Williams does, and he's better at them. He's a more explosive playmaker in the passing game. He's not as good of a pass blocker, but he's serviceable enough as a pass blocker. Ty Montgomery, and he's a better runner than Jamal, and that is no disrespect to Jamal Williams. He's a cool dude. He went back. I love seeing the stories about Williams. He went back and found some dude that was standing in the stands with his jersey on and signed it for him. Awesome. He plays catch with the fans before the game. Cool. Awesome. There's two running backs on this roster that are better than him, which, Jason, leads to the funny story about there was a guy sitting next to you in the stands during the game, and they handed the ball to Montgomery, and it was like a two-yard gain or something like that. And the guy says, why do they keep handing this dude the ball? He's not a running back. They have three good running backs, and they hand the ball to this guy, to which I kind of mumbled into your ear like that's one of the three guys that you're talking about if you're saying they have three good running backs. But McCarthy's criticism there, that matters. The criticism of maybe not having his rookie receivers ready to play for a moment like last week in Detroit or this week at home against San Francisco, fair criticism. Can you find a role for those guys? Now that you would imagine next week against the Rams, the Randall Cobb and Geronimo Allison duo should be back in the lineup. That should not mean the end of Marquez Valdes-Scantling's playing time. He certainly deserves something to find a position, find a way to be put into a position that he can succeed. Those things are fair criticisms. However, predictable play calling guy, nah, I ain't buying that bullshit. Come at me with something else. Jason, I mentioned at the end there the wide receivers. I mentioned Cobb and Allison will be back. What do you do now with Marquez, specifically Valdes-Scantling? I know that, I mean, there was one play that Equanimeous St. Brown made, and he certainly looks talented. The play that Brown made at the end of the game was awesome. But, I mean, he hasn't exactly been consistent. Jamon Moore made a catch. That was good to see, nice to see. But Valdes-Scantling has certainly separated himself amongst the rookie wide receivers on this roster. So what do you do when Cobb and Allison are back? Because really the Packers haven't rotated their wide receivers in and out a lot, and they haven't run a whole lot of four wide. So usually it's just the top three guys play, and away we go. So what do you do when they come back?
Well, don't forget, Cobb had a really rough game against Washington. So it's not like that's the norm for him. He owned it and, you know, said all the right things. But this is not Randall Cobb's offense. This is not going to be Randall Cobb's job for much longer. And the way that the rookies have played already, you assume they're going to continue to improve. Maybe they won't. It's not a given, but you assume they will. So it wouldn't behoove the Packers to just all of a sudden sit the rookies in favor of both Allison and Cobb. I think you still have to work Valdes-Scantling into the offense. He's only gaining more confidence. I mean, he was the target on the 4th-and-4 try for a touchdown when the Packers were knocking on the door and trying to tie the game. So, you know, he's obviously got enough trust from Rodgers, and I know that, you know, some will roll their eyes there and say, you know, it's not about trust. You throw to the open guy. You know, Aaron Rodgers is not the coach, and if he can't find the open guy, then, you know, that's a problem. It is, yes. But if you've ever played quarterback or if you've ever played sports, I mean, there is something to be said about a team chemistry and certain things that you trust in certain guys that you play with, and that's just natural. But I think the rookies need to continue to get worked in. So the solution there is that if you're not going to run the ball, which is a crime, because like you said, there's three capable running backs that all bring something different to the table, then why don't you try doing some 4 and 5 wide then? You can absolutely do it. Now that you've got, you know, if you consider Jimmy Graham one of the four, Marquez Valdes-Scantling is your fourth guy. And he's very capable. He got open. He's playing well above his rookie stature, and he is the Aaron Jones of this year's draft from a receiver perspective. He's the middle guy between Jamon Moore and Equanimeous St. Brown, and he's ahead of both of them. Aaron Jones was the middle running back in front of you know, in between Jamal Williams, who was drafted ahead of Aaron Jones, and Devontae Mays. Mays isn't even on the team anymore. So you got to find a way to keep working those guys in, because they're going to take over and be the men, you know, that are running this offense next year. We're not going to have to worry about the quandary of what to do with Randall Cobb and everyone else, because Randall Cobb's going to be wearing a different uniform. So that's my take. You got to keep the rookies involved, and I really hope that it makes me nervous, because Mike McCarthy has this formula in his head of how he likes to divvy out snaps and playing time and the different criteria that players have to reach before he'll put them out there. But I just, Mike, don't be dumb. Do the obvious thing. Play the guys when it's time to play them. I mean, Equanimeous St. Brown, the catch that he made was not only a phenomenal catch, it was in a very, very tight pressure situation, and he could not have looked more unfazed by that moment. So, okay, props to the scouting department and to good Brian Gutekunst and the Packers for finding the gems. Now you got to do the right thing with them. You got to continue to find a way to get them on the field.
Agreed. And, you know, I mean, my buddy Matt asked me a fair question. Does Valdes-Scantling's speed on its own just open up things for the other guys? And it's a completely fair question to ask. I mean, I look at it this way. You know, the Packers have gone empty. They've gone, you know, they'll spread you out, but they'll do it with, say, their three wide receivers plus Jimmy Graham and, you know, Jamal Williams or whoever their running back is. In this case, instead of Jamal Williams or even instead of Graham, not that I don't like Graham, because we haven't gotten to him yet, but we will. Not that I don't like Graham, but now you add another player with a little more speed, something to make the defense worry. That Graham doesn't make people worry again, but it's just something else that you can do. St. Brown, get him some valuable reps so he's ready later in the year. Should, knock on wood, somebody get hurt again. Jamon Moore, I mean, maybe that's a possibility as well, but you can rotate these guys. I think if nothing else, I don't know about Jamon Moore yet, but I know MBS and EQ both have shown, at least, if nothing else, they are not fazed by the moment. And I think that's really true of MBS, because he's made some really big plays in his opportunities. And if nothing else, again, he's fast. He can just run like the wind, Jason. I think if nothing else, we saw Monday night, his play speed. This is the first time I've seen him play in person on offense, and his speed just jumps off the screen jumps at you immediately. In this case, he's got, you know, that he makes fast people look not fast thing, to quote The Longest Yard. There's got to be a way to give him opportunities. Just put him in the game, run some crossers, run some, you know, drag routes, run a couple, let him run a couple nine routes. Maybe it opens up something underneath for a guy like Adams or Graham. But there's definitely something that you can do with Valdes-Scantling's skill set, and even St. Brown's. I think you can find ways to get those guys on the field and give them some valuable reps. I keep saying we're going to get to Jimmy Graham, so we're going to get to Jimmy Graham right now. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, he's a disappointing free agent signing. He hasn't had the huge impact that everybody's anticipated. He's only has one touchdown on the year so far. Jason, I think we saw on Monday night he can not only still play, but I am encouraged that he can be effective between the 20s, because a lot of people thought when Graham came into Green Bay that he was just going to basically replace Jordy Nelson as a red zone weapon and be a red zone only type of target. And that hasn't been the case. And it seems, it's nice to me at least, that Rodgers was looking for Graham early and often, getting him the ball and letting him make some plays. Now, again, I've said this about 800 times. Is Jimmy Graham the player he was in New Orleans? No. Is he going to be that in Green Bay? No. Can he still affect the game down the seam and make some plays for you? Yes. Is he going to be a bigger red zone threat by the end of the year? Yes, I do believe so. And I think that, you know, everybody could say, oh, the, you know, the chemistry is working in training camp or whatever. The reality is, until they play together, Rodgers and Graham were not going to be on the same page. It even took a while with Jared Cook. You know, it took Jared Cook a while to get going toward the end of the year, for everybody that remembers him. And I think it's fair to say at this point it's a mistake that the Packers let him walk. Obviously, that's hindsight because I was all for the signing of the other guy, who I will not mention. Took a while for him and Cook to get on the same page. It was going to take a little while for him and Graham. And Graham looks to be like he's hitting his stride. Jason, I have this hunch that Jimmy's going to have a – I don't want to call it a huge second half because that's going to make people think like 10 touchdowns and 1,000 yards receiving. But a big second half. Do you feel that way? Do you feel like there's something good coming?
I hope so. He's got – they have enough veteranship between the two of them that they should. And Graham is not going to, stop trying. And I'm not trying to say that to compare him to last year and what we dealt with last year, which were very, different circumstances. Aaron Rodgers by this time was out and things were looking a lot different and led to some of the reactions and the actions that took place. I think Graham still has capability in him. What was unfortunate on that long catch and run, if there could be anything unfortunate about it, because it was a great long play, was that 4 or 5 years ago, maybe Jimmy Graham takes that to the house. But he doesn't have that capability anymore, and he is still dealing with an injury. I think it's a knee, if I'm not mistaken. And that's, if it's not being reported, that's fine because, the injury report, and I'll say this again, I think I've said it a million times, and I'm going to try to promise not to bring it up again, but everybody was all confused why Aaron Rodgers got pulled off the injury report, and I said this in my diatribe before you came on last week. It's, if an injury is no longer something that is in danger of keeping a player out of a game, that injury does not need to be reported. I don't think. I mean, unless it's gotten worse or it's not going away. So that might be why we don't hear much about it, but Jimmy Graham is still dealing with a little bit of an injury. So, that could be a factor, but these guys are going to get on a roll and they're going to start rolling at some point. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say run the table and that they're going to catch fire on this whole second half because the schedule that they face coming out of the bye is not very favorable to do that. But I do think there's going to be some opportunities for them to catch, some momentum and get some really good things going on. And it's still Jimmy Graham. So I'm more apt to say yes than no, but I don't think they've clicked. I mean, Graham is still missing where he needs to go in the zone. And I don't know what kind of conversations are being had between he and Rodgers. I'm not worried about it. I mean, Jimmy Graham's committed and dedicated to playing football. He's already done, 10 times more than the previous guy did last year, who was supposed to be the feature tight end, which didn't end up being the case. So, I'm not too worried about it. I still think Graham draws coverage. You can't not cover him. You can't cover him with a linebacker. You can't cover him with, he's still a mismatch. So, when you get down to the red zone, I think teams are still keying on him. I'd have to look at more film. I don't know if you've seen any that leads you to believe this, but I think that's why other guys are getting opportunities in the end zone is because Jimmy Graham is the obvious thought to go to, and defenses are like, we've got to cover that guy. He's like the Gronk. And so now you're giving Devontae Adams one-on-one. Well, that's a disaster for the defense every single time. Marquez Valdez-Scantling is only going to mature in his route running near the goal line, and maybe he runs a better route or he makes a different play and they convert that fourth down touchdown later in the season. So it may not necessarily be Graham. It might be what he opens up for some of the other guys just from his continuing to evolve and grow and mature in this new offense for him.
Yeah, that sounds all right to me. As far as the red zone, the red zone offense has been a struggle as a whole. Mason Crosby leads the league in field goal attempts. That means the Packers are not cashing in. So I think that's a failure kind of across the board. I don't want to blame just Jimmy Graham. I don't want to blame Adams. I don't want to blame the play caller. I don't want to blame the guys on the field because I'm sure it's a breakdown across the board. And I know that there's some, there's some small nuances that the young receivers probably aren't getting and a lot of new guys playing together. But the reality is They haven't been good enough in the red zone, and these next two games especially, they're playing the Los Angeles Rams, who are the best team in football, and the New England Patriots, who are, oh, I don't know, maybe the greatest dynasty in the history of professional football. It's at least a potential argument you can make. And they look to be like they're ready to go get on a bit of a roll here because, well, Jason, just as we said after they lost to Detroit, I ain't falling for that bullshit. I know what they're doing. They're going to feel it out, and they're going to get on a roll in October, November, December, just like they always do. They just beat the Chiefs, who was everybody's darling, on Sunday night. So these next two games, they're going to have to score touchdowns, and they're going to need Jimmy Graham to do it, and it's going to be a lot of other people as well needed to do it. So that's where we're at with the offense. As we mentioned, the Packers were down 30-23 late in the game, and they got the ball, and they get inside the goal line. Jason, you mentioned they fail on fourth down, and we're thinking, like, okay, the Packers had two timeouts left at the time because, heaven forbid, they ever have three timeouts at the end of the game. They always have to waste one or two, it seems like. They get towards the end, it's like they need a three and out to give themselves a chance. Sure enough, they stop the run twice. Kyler Fackrell makes a play of all people, and they force a punt and give the offense a chance, and they go right down the field like it's surgical. I mean, it's incredible to me how this offense just flips the switch in those late game situations. And I mean, you saw it against the Bears, you saw it against the Vikings to some degree, you saw it the other night against the 49ers. The Packers offense late in games is very good. And it was again on Monday night, and they got an opportunity, and then, of course, they get down the field, and who else would it be? But it's Davante Adams standing in the corner of the end zone with the ball. He high points it, goes and grabs it, lands in the end zone for a touchdown. And, Jason, I thought that was fitting since it was our first game. Now, we've been to other games together. Like, we've been in the house at the same time. We've never sat together. This time we sat together, and everybody knows going into last – the season before that, it was Team Devontae. That was our thing. You know, the people that wanted him cut for guys like Jeff Janis and Jared Aberderis and God knows who else. We never really wavered in our support of Davante Adams, and he scores the game-tying touchdown. And honestly, he may very well have cemented himself as – I mean, I don't think there's any arguing he's a top 10 receiver in this league. I think you can make a very strong argument that he is a top 5 receiver in this league. Davante Adams is a stud in every sense of the word. There's nothing he doesn't do particularly well. His route running is down the field. He's a touchdown machine in the red zone. He's actually their best red zone target at this point. Jason, I'd be remiss if we didn't give a little appreciation to the Team Devontae fan club. That's somebody, too, that I found easy to root for. Now, for a little bit of backstory here, Adams was drafted the year that I interned with Bill Huber at Packer Report. So I got to interview him shortly after he was drafted. Likeable kid, said all the right things, seems to do all the right things on the field. Rodgers clearly really liked him from the jump. Struggled really bad when it was time for him to get in the spotlight. Like, he was one of the biggest reasons the 2015 Packers offense was as bad as it was. Played on one leg that whole year, and it seemed like he never got better. If he caught the ball, there was no yards after the catch, and he didn't catch the ball very often either. Struggled in the national spotlight in front of everybody, you know, and made everybody believe, like I said, I mean, I don't mean this to be disrespectful, but, like, people wanted Jeff Janis and Jared Aberderis to start over him. Those guys are not in the league anymore. They're not in the league anymore. They are bagging groceries. I don't know what they're doing for a living. Jeff Janis, it's about hunting season, so I imagine that's what he's doing. And Aberderis is retired for injury reasons, and even when he was on the field, he wasn't very good, no matter what Michael Rodney tries to tell you. Which I'm convinced that dude had to have been his agent or something like that. My God. So to see him grow in front of our very eyes the last couple of years, and then now this year really was the year where he was the number one last year. We all knew that. The ones who paid like close attention knew that. But Jordy Nelson was still on the roster. So I think it took a minute for everybody to realize, the Packers' number one best receiver is Devontae Adams. And I'm thrilled that this guy's on our team. He's one of the best receivers in the league. So, Jason, a little appreciation for our guy, 17.
Yeah, he's obviously, I've already kind of covered it. His footwork is phenomenal. He's the number one receiver in all sense of the word. Whether anybody wants to sit there and say that he's worth his contract or not, he keeps this offense afloat. He's matured. He's grown. He's become what the Packers wanted him to. I think as a second rounder, he's obviously exceeded his draft stock. He's worth the money he's making. All of those cliches, all very, very true. I can't honestly say that I was 100% on the bandwagon. I was having a really hard time with him in 2015, the way he played, and struggling with whether or not he was going to be a part of this offense or not. Just seemed like his head wasn't in it. He was dropping balls. He had the ankle injury early. In fact, he suffered that ankle injury at a game you and I were both at against the Chiefs on Monday Night Football. And that became a problem through the rest of the season. And they still were able to do some good things with the season, but then, you know, unfortunately it ended the way it did against the Cardinals, who were recording this on Thursday night, are getting their butts kicked by the Denver Broncos right now. And I am not upset about it in the slightest. Everybody knows how I feel about the Cardinals. So he's our guy, and he's obviously going to continue to be that as long as he's healthy. And he's got a lot of years left in this league, and he's now kind of the guy that the young receivers are going to look up to. And I hope that they do, because if you look at some of the best receivers around the league, one of the things that they do is they catch the ball and they have phenomenal footwork. You know, I think about guys like Stephon Diggs and Tyreek Hill, and they've got kind of a unique type of athleticism. You know, that catch that Hill made against the Patriots where he catches the ball, he leaps, he catches it, and then he takes it in. You know, Stephon Diggs with that catch and run, the Minnesota Miracle last year in the playoffs. You know, Devontae Adams doesn't have quite that, but he's got it in a different way. He's bigger, and he just thing is when he gets the ball in his hands, like, good luck. If you're in the open field against Devontae Adams, just lay down. You're done. It's over. So those are the things that I love to know about Adams. When he catches the ball, you know, that's only the beginning of the fun. The rest of the fun is just starting. And I'll point back to the play that is in our intro. Goes back to the 2014 season and the playoff game against the Dallas Cowboys when Adams catches the ball over the middle and jukes two Dallas safeties on his way to the end zone. And he made that play happen because of his footwork and because of his moxie, even as a rookie. So, great player. Spent a long time talking about him here, but I'm gushing, and obviously I have to. He's, you know, he caught the game-winning touchdown like it was nothing. That was not a nothing throw and catch. That was a very good route. He separated from the defensive back perfectly. Rodgers threw it to a spot. Devontae did the rest. Not every receiver in the league can do that. You said top five. I think absolutely. I mean, we call us homers, but then I'll challenge everybody else to name me five other guys in this league, other receivers in this league that are better than Devontae Adams.
Completely fair. And that, you know, that play you mentioned in our intro, the pass against the Cowboys, catch and run, that play right there is exactly why I never really left his corner. I mean, that guy, that player did not just forget how to play football in one season's worth of time. So it's nice to see. I mean, we've spent a lot of time on Adams. It's absolutely warranted. He made a big catch down the field again at the end of the game to set up my public apology, which is now necessary. Mason Crosby, if you are listening, and I'm certain that you are, I am sorry for screaming at you in Detroit the way that I did. I am sorry for wanting you cut. I actually believe I looked up yesterday the exact words I said. And it was, make the kicker, I would not call him by name. I said, make the kicker walk back to Green Bay and then cut him on Monday. I was wrong, because you made, I believe, four field goals Monday night, including the game winner. You have earned my deepest and most sincere apology. Mike McCarthy's faith in you, the Packers organization's loyalty to you, you certainly made it warranted in 2013 after coming off a terrible season. And, again, they didn't waver after a bad week, and I was wrong. It's that simple, because Mason Crosby made the game-winning field goal on Monday night, and it was perfect. It was it was cool to see the interview afterwards. You could tell. I mean, I think a lot of times, Jason, we forget that these guys are human beings. They're not robots. And I mean, I get it. They are well compensated. They make more money than you and I will ever see. And that means some people are not going to feel sorry for them when something goes wrong for them. But at the same time, I think we forget. Yeah, these guys, these are just dudes wearing a helmet and some shoulder pads, and in Crosby's case, kicking a football for a living. And you could see after the game, Crosby, like, starting to cry in his post-game interview. You could tell it was a rough week for him. It was something that weighed on him. It was something that he was – it was like this huge weight lifted off his shoulders that not only did he make the kick, but he made a couple kicks and didn't let his team down in the process because, I mean, Crosby can do the math. He knows that if he makes his kicks the previous week against Detroit, they probably win the game. He knows that if he makes a kick against Minnesota, they don't have a tie on their record. He knows all that stuff. But – It was just nice to see. I mean, you know, to get a little away from their people too thing. He did a good job on Monday night. I mean, that's his job when you're paid $5 million a year as a kicker. You got to perform. And he did, but at the same time, it was nice to see him. I mean, literally not even 6 days later, 6 days after the worst day of his career, he comes out, makes a few kicks, a couple deep ones, and including the game winner. So, Jason, I'm sure you have a few stories about some of my reactions to Crosby's night, so I will not steal those from you. So go ahead and tell us about the kicker.
Okay, well, for those of you who don't know, and I learned firsthand, I guess when Mason Crosby is struggling, Jacob can't watch the kick until one goes through the uprights, and then he can watch the ensuing kicks after that point. So Crosby lines up, and he makes his first kick, so he unlocks that code right there, and we watched him have a perfect night. He made all of his kicks. The crowd erupted. The crowd erupted at the end of pregame warmups when he kicked the ball through the uprights. You know, they were ready to welcome Crosby back into their good graces because Lord knows he's going to be the Packers kicker come hell or high water this season, and so they have to want him to succeed if they're a Packers fan and you want your team to win. And sure enough, the game comes down to a Mason Crosby kick, which, is, you know, unfortunately should not have because the Packers should have won that game more handily. But Crosby had a great night, and we know the kind of guy that he is. He's very involved in the community. He's a great teammate. He really truly is a good guy. But, you know, I think he realized how difficult it was for him to bounce back and recover from what was 2012. When that season happened, that was a rough year for him. And last year had to have taken him back to that place where he didn't want to have to be dealing with that week after week. I mean, that season, it wasn't just one game. It was an entire year of disasters. And that Packers team still managed to make the divisional round of the playoffs with a chance to win that game before everything else unraveled on that night. So, you know, he's going to be a big part of this, the offense's success if they're going to continue to kick field goals. Like you said, they've attempted more than any other team, and that's unfortunate when you've got the quarterback that you do. That's not the way it's supposed to go, and I know that that's not what the Packers offense would prefer, is not to be kicking field goals, to be putting the ball in the end zone. But, you know, until I see Crosby melt down or have difficulties again, I have to believe that, you know, he'll go back to form and being as good as he is. You know, he's going to be needed over these next couple games. You've got the L.A. Rams coming off the bye, and you've got the New England Patriots on the road. And, you know, regardless of how good or not good those defenses are, we know the Rams defense is really good. So the Packers are probably going to have to take every field goal they can get when they're in Los Angeles. New England's defense is a different story. You know, the Packers need to score touchdowns against that defense because they can. They're not the greatest, and you're not going to beat the Patriots in Foxborough with your kicker. But he still has to make all those kicks, and it's going to be a little bit cold out there too. So I'd like to believe our guy's back, and until further notice, he's been with this team long enough and through enough years that I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. You know, I never said cut him, get rid of him, because honestly, there wasn't anybody else out there that I could think of that we could bring in, the Packers could bring in, that was going to do a better job. You got a seasoned veteran who at least, if nothing else, knows how to get through that and how to work through it. And he's older. He's got the maturity. Don't forget, a lot of these young kickers are young. They're still in their early 20s. You know, think back to how you were in your early 20s. You know, Jake, for you, it was just a couple years ago. For me, it was many, many years ago. And I can tell you, you don't have the same ability to get through things, you know, from a maturity standpoint as you do when you're older. It's just kind of a fact of life. So glad Two's back on it. He had a great night. Fortunately, we were in the house to witness it.
Yeah, and that brings us to, I think this is a good final point of the show. The Packers are on a bye week, guys, so we're going to take a bye week of our own. They don't play this Sunday. They play the Rams coming off that. We'll be back with you guys after the Rams game. But there was a tweet that I put out on the way up to the game on Monday, and I basically said, you know, dear Lambeau crowd, I'll let you know, you know, I'm in the house tonight, and I'm going to be standing and screaming my ass off on every single third down when the Packers are on defense. And what I meant by that is, you know, I don't want to be told to sit down. I don't want to be told, you know, you're in the way or anything like that. I'm at a game. I'm there to lose my voice. And, Jason, I mean, you can vouch. On Tuesday morning or, you know, Monday night, my voice was pretty trashed. I think we did a pretty good job bringing the noise, so to speak. But there's a few things with that. First of all, anybody, this is going to be a little rough, guys, so here's the deep water. Anybody who ever says that the Packers have one of the best fan bases in the world, that's wrong. That is incorrect. That is not true. The Packers crowd is weak as hell, and they don't stand up. Not only do they tell you to sit on third down, they don't stand on third down. And through that game on Monday night, there's a few different things. Now, one, here's my thing. I know the Brewers were playing in the National League Championship Series, a series that they are still in. They won on Monday night. Awesome. Cool. Great. Grand. Wonderful. If you wanted to worry about the Milwaukee Brewers, we had four people in our section, Jason, both guys sitting next to me and both guys sitting next to you, literally while the Packers game is going on. They are sitting watching the Brewers on their phone the whole time. If you want to worry about the Brewers, stay the hell at home. Give that seat to somebody that wants to watch the Packers game. They are – the Packers fans cheer when they're on offense. They do the wave when they're on offense. A complete lack of understanding of what is going on during the game. The fact that the Packers have to put a graphic on their scoreboard that says, quiet, please, offense at work, is effing embarrassing. It's ridiculous. And then not only that, as the Packers tied the game – well, for starters, after the fourth down failed, the throw to Valdes-Scantling, that was incomplete. Fans were leaving. They left. There was 5 minutes or something like that left in the game when they left. Now, not the most perfect situation for a comeback, but game's certainly not over. And then they score a touchdown. Devontae Adams scores a touchdown. It's a tie game. It is a tie game on Monday Night Football at Lambeau Field. And our section and the stadium is clearing out even more. I don't know where they were going. Let me give you guys some advice if you're going to a game. You ain't beating traffic. That's not a thing. It's not possible. There's 80,000 people in the frickin' stadium and another 30,000 or whatever in the bars and such around the area. There is no beating traffic to get home. So if you want to beat traffic, again, stay the hell at home. They miss from there. The Packers end up winning the game. They, of course, kick a game-winning field goal with the stadium three-quarters of the way full because everybody has to get home to beat traffic and God knows what else. It's a night game. What the hell is the difference between being home at 1 a.m. versus 2 a.m.? It's a late night and an early morning if you had to work the next day. I was disgusted with the crowd on Monday night. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. People leaving early. People not paying attention to the game. People not knowing what the hell is going on during the game. People trying to pick fights with us in front of us. That was kind of funny. But nonetheless, I mean, Jason, I think in our row for the field goal, there were three of us left. And that was it. It was you, me, and this other guy next to us that we had a hug with after Crosby made the kick. But I never again want to hear what a great fan base the Packers have. Because, listen, this isn't a uncommon theme. There is loads of enemy color in the stands every single game. Doesn't matter when they're playing, who they're playing, what the stakes are. That happens every week. They're dead silent on third downs. There is no home field advantage to being in Green Bay. Hell, they're a bigger nuisance for our offense than they are the opposing team's offense. That is embarrassing on so many different levels. Now, when I'm in the stadium, in the stands, I'm going to do my part as much as I can to try and change that. The reality of the situation is the fan base is brutal, and it was absolutely horrible on Monday night. And people leaving in a tie game, embarrassing. You know, Jason, I think I said this to you after the game, 55-3 at the start of the fourth quarter, and I'm freezing my balls off. Yeah, I'll leave. You know, I don't need to be there to watch that shit. But 30-30 in the fourth quarter and the greatest quarterback of all times getting ready to take the ball down the field and get us a win? Inexcusable. And shame on all of you. And, Jason, you can vouch for this. I said as such. I was pointing at all the cars as we were leaving. Way to go. You beat traffic. You're sitting in a standstill. Nice job. Super. You missed the game for this. Good for you. Go ahead, Jason. I'm disgusted.
Well, a lot to get to there. I mean, they missed the game because I'll tell you why they left. A lot of them left because they didn't think this team was going to pull it out. They left because they didn't think the Packers were going to win, and they didn't want to be in the stands to watch them lose and be disappointed and cold and then have to sit in traffic. So, okay, fine. You made your statement. I don't know if I believe in this team. Fine. Cool. I've been there before. I've turned games off way too early and found out that they came back and won. Guilty. Done it. When you go to the game, and I get that my perspective is my perspective. For me, going to Lambeau Field is probably one of the most special things that I could do in my life at any given time. And that's why whenever I get a chance, you know, I know we talked about the Chiefs game. Sure, it'd be fun to go see a road venue, but if there's a chance for me to go to Lambeau Field, I'm going to pick that every single time. So I'm not leaving early. I mean, I'm going to get there early, and I'm going to stay, and I'm going to stay for the entire game, and I want to watch all the festivities, and I'm basically going to have to get kicked out at the end when the ushers come through and say, okay, it's time to go. So you hit the nail on the head there. There were a lot of fans in the stands. This was not a gold package game either, folks. This was a regular Packers game. Season ticket holders, the guys next to us, at least the story that I got, was they were middle-aged to plus a few years on top of that. The guy claims to have been in the stands for the Ice Bowl, and I know that there's this running joke that there's 500,000 people that were at the Ice Bowl. Lambeau Field only holds 78,000, 80,000 seats. But he was a season ticket holder. His dad was a season ticket holder. And there he is sitting next to me. This was the same guy who made the Ty Montgomery comment that you referenced earlier in the show. And he was also calling for Dom Capers to return when the defense was giving up deep balls to Marquise Goodwin after deep ball to Marquise Goodwin earlier in the game. Bring back Dom Capers because Mike Pettine's defense can't get it done anymore. So, okay, well, that's unfortunate. Somebody who's a season ticket holder and clearly watches a lot of Packers football in person and has been around as long as he has to watch this team rise, fall, rise, and they always rise, and they've been good for a long time. Can't get it right and can't figure it out. They left early. The Brewers win. Everybody's erupting in cheers, completely unaware of the fact that the Packers have the football. The only thing that didn't happen, and I'm shocked that it didn't, that would have been more embarrassing to add on top of everything, was for the fans to do the wave in the stands while the Packers are on offense. The issue is that you've got people all around the world and all around the U.S. that are in line to get season tickets at Lambeau Field because they're very lucrative. They're worth a lot of money. You can make a lot if you have season tickets to the Packers because you can charge double face value for them business. It's not about supporting your team. It's not about the sheer joy of, oh, my God, I get to go to 8 Packers games this year and see my team live in the stands and cheer for them and experience the Lambeau Field and the tailgating and all the great atmosphere that's around there. It's dollar signs. And these are people that have the means to buy the tickets. It doesn't mean they're Packers fans. It doesn't mean they're diehards. It doesn't mean they're going to get loud, you know, get loud Lambeau. You can throw that right out the window. So fortunately, nobody told us to sit down. I think we both kind of made it known we were going to stand, and I was kind of looking around behind me, and the folks behind us weren't standing. And it was like, okay, I kind of stood and kind of hunched over a little bit. So it's like I basically was saying, like, I'm going to stand, but I'm mindful of the fact that you're there. But you need to realize that this is, in fact, a football game. And if not everybody's making noise, we're not going to have the impact on the offense that we want when our team is on defense. Now, on the telecast, I watched it back after the game, and the Monday Night Football crew did say at the end, okay, the stadium is very loud here. So there was noise being made. There was enough noise, but it's not the same as it was when I was watching the NFC Championship game in 96 when Favre brought the team back to the Super Bowl and the whole, all those guys, Reggie, Holmgren, that place was shaking. Lambeau Field was shaking. Every single fan was waving a towel. Everyone was on the same page. They were true Packers fans there to support the team and make noise. And I'll bet you not a single person left that stadium until after they dismantled the stage that the Packers accepted the NFC trophy on. It's a different time. It's a different time in a different era. But I will say this, it's still a football game. You're listening to this out there, anybody, don't you dare tell anybody down in front or to sit down when you're at Lambeau Field. Come at me and argue with me all you want on Twitter, Facebook, call me, text me, whatever. Message me however you want to. I'll go at it with you all day and all night until I wear you down and you pass out. This is football, and fans deserve the right to be passionate and have the outlet that football brings. So you're going to go support your team, support your team. Make noise, get loud, embrace the environment for what it is. This is my parting thought for the show. Fantastic. Everybody enjoy the bye week. Hopefully the Brewers can overcome what they're up against right now. I don't know what it'll look like when we reconvene in a couple weeks. Jacob, I want you to enjoy the bye week. Enjoy your new home and all of the things that a new marriage brings to you. But everybody, just remember, we're very fortunate to have a team that's worth rooting for every Sunday until further notice. Let's leave it at that. Just enjoy being a Packers fan, because I know we did for 3 hours. We had a 3.5 hours, and we had a very thrilling time doing it, and it's an experience second to none, and I'm grateful that we had that chance.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, basically, you were nicer about it than I'm going to be. If you want to sit in your chair, leave your ass at home. That's, I mean, that's easiest way for me to put it. They have recliners at home. They have couches. I mean, I get it. If you want to sit down, keep your ass at home. But the stadium, that's where you're supposed to lose your voice. And I know that that is possible. Because, Jason, you mentioned the 96 NFC Championship game. I could go back even more recent than that. The season opener against the Chicago Bears. Hell, the next week against the Minnesota Vikings. It was loud in that stadium. It needs to be that way every single game. Not just the Bears, not just the Vikings, not just the Seahawks, you know, the revenge games or stuff like that, the team that beat us in the playoffs the year before. Every single game. Lambeau Field needs to be a place that not only is revered because of its history and everything like that, but a place people don't want to come to because they know not only, A, are they going to get their ass kicked, but they're going to hear about it from start to finish from the fans. So, as you said, Jason, we will reconvene after the bye. The Packers will take on the Los Angeles Rams after the bye, and then they'll take on the New England Patriots. So this is a huge stretch. We're going to find out exactly what kind of team this Packers team is. 3-2-1 through the first half of the season. Very easily could be 5-1. Very easily could be 1-5. The hope after the bye is to find some semblance of consistency. And we'll talk a lot more about that after we reconvene. So, again, no show next week. No games next week. Nothing like that. We will reconvene after hopefully what is a big, big Packers win in Los Angeles against Sean McVay, Jared Goff, Todd Gurley, and the juggernaut that appears to be the Los Angeles Rams. But on that note, we will exit for today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at PackerPulse. You can follow Jason. He is at Jason Perrone. And you can follow me. I am at Jacob Westendorf. I want to thank all of you guys. It really was kind of cool to have some of you guys reach out to me day of the wedding, Sunday, and say, you know, congrats or whatever it was that you guys had said. A lot of you reached out. That was pretty cool. I am thankful for that. It was a cool way for us to connect on Sunday afternoon. So thank you guys for that. Make sure you check out our sponsor. That's Ticket King. We want to thank them. Jason got his ticket from Ticket King, even though we didn't end up using that one, which is just another legend for that story, I guess, for that week. But we didn't end up using that ticket, but they did have tickets available on the day of the game. They have tickets much more before the day of the game, obviously. There's tickets for the Dolphins. There's plenty of home games left. Grab some tickets. Let's go in and watch the Packers. I guess the next home game would be in November against the Miami Dolphins. So could be a good game. I'd recommend trying to go to it. So that'll do it. I don't have a whole lot to say. I guess I'm a little rusty myself from that. But thank you guys for listening in, and we will see you next time.
Of the PAX Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.